Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
Hello, the Mansion House. Nah, that's bullshit. That's bullshit. I'm not having it. Hello, the Mansion House.
Is this live? Is this live?
Much better. Much better. Yes, this is live. We get away with things different here.
Bullshit.
Thanks very much. We have an amazing quiz coming and a very important skills test, which may or may not involve some public liability insurance of well-known flankers falling off the stage. You have to mind your feet, lads. That's all I'm going to say. That's coming a little bit later on. I should tell you as well about our tweet wall. One of our competition winners is going to come through that, so just make sure you use the hashtag OTBHRC. And of course, this is the Off the Ball Roadshow in association with Heineken Rugby Club. For fans get more out of the game, exclusive member-only events just like this one, and tickets to Champions Cup and Challenge Cup games. Join today at HeinekenRugbyClub.com. And you've been trying to win tickets for a Heineken Cup quarterfinals. You played in the Heineken Cup quarterfinal, Martin, against Leinster. Leinster beat you. You played in this. You played in a semi-final against Leicester.
I knew this was coming.
Does anything stick out to you about that famous game? I mean, you wouldn't have won the final anyway because Leinster were waiting for you, so it didn't matter, right?
Well, I made his career because if we'd beat Leinster, Leinster's sort of legacy.
We were rooting for you guys in the semi-final. So we had our Cardiff jerseys on.
I know you're all wondering what the hell we're talking about, because who the hell was paying attention to Cardiff against Leinster in the semi-final of the Champions Cup? Like, most people apart from the Leinster lads weren't. I need you to pay very close attention to the commentator's curse. Just listen to what the commentators
say.
Are
you showing it?
We're going to show the whole thing.
Oh,
roll it there, Roisin.
Williams, the king of Cardiff for so long. This would be the cruelest thing if Martin Williams was to miss it. Brilliant footballer. I say Martin Williams gets it.
Well, we've always said that this man is a true footballer in every sense, the way he plays the game. Let's see it now.
Hey!
Doesn't get it! Leicester have a shot for the final themselves now. Martin Williams, of all people.
Of all people!
Can I ask?
Yeah, thanks for that. I had counselling for 3 years after that to get over here, so
what,
thanks for bringing that up.
In the name of Jesus, were they doing, giving a flanker the kick?
Well, I was actually the seventh player up, so no, eighth actually, because all our backs had gone through it, and I was the first. I was, because I was captain at the time, and Dai Young was our coach, and he'd left off the pitch, so we'd picked our five like you do in football, and he was still... It was 4-4. Then we went to the two backs who hadn't taken the kick, which was Tom Shanklin, Richie Rees. They both kicked theirs. The Leicester boys kicked theirs. And I'm looking around now and I'm thinking, geez, I've got Andy Powell who wanted to take a kick. And I'm like, honestly, I'm thinking to myself, no way am I letting Andy Powell. Gethin Jenkins, in fairness, he wanted to take a kick. And I can't let a prop go up before me. And I was so confident walking up to that as well.
But back on each side had missed one beforehand.
Tom James, actually, our old winger, missed the kick for us to win it. So
Johnny,
so it's his fault.
Worse than Tom James's fault. Actually.
Johnny Murphy had taken a kick as well.
That he got?
He missed his.
John Murphy missed, actually. And then Tom had his to kick it. And
Johnny
I know how he feels. I missed one in the... Under-19s World Cup in 98 that we subsequently went to
that
win.
That's obviously as big as a Heineken Cup semi-final. So you know exactly how I feel.
I don't know about you.
I was the goal. The difference is I was the goal kicker for my team.
Tough game. But at the end of the day, it was a happy ending, wasn't it? Leinster went on and won the Heineken Cup. First one, that wasn't it?
First one.
Anybody but Leicester, basically.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So no, we actually wanted them to win so you could see... He lost to the loser. But we met up with the Lions then a couple of weeks later, because it was 2009. And my spot, I got to Pennyhill Park, and there was a box in my room off my sponsors. Can I mention it? Puma were my sponsors at the time, and I'm thinking, all new stash from Puma to go to South Africa. And in fairness to them, I opened it up, and there were 25 kicking tees in there.
You're enjoying this... non-BBC, with him cursing at the start.
Yeah,
and I mentioned Puma.
There are other brands, of course, if Brian would like to mention Adidas at this point.
I was Nike for 10 years, so yeah.
Serge, who were your sponsors just not today? Is that Lacoste?
I've got the same sponsor.
Like Puma.
Okay, right. Oh. Yeah.
But now my sponsor is different now. It's the drinking.
It's true, which we also like. I do want to talk to you about the art of being a number seven as well, because obviously we have slash French six. I'm always interested, like your job is, there's twofold. There's the attacking job where you have to run the support lines and make sure that you're there at the ruck first, or also to be the continuity player. But when you are attacking, when the opposition have the ball and you're attacking that 10, when do you decide to go? When's the moment that you key off and you go, okay? Because if you get it wrong, you look stupid. But when you get it right, it's this massive surge of momentum through the whole crowd.
Yeah, look, you're as a seven by nature. You know, you live on the edge. People used to say that Richie McCaw was the best. You know, he's a cheat. But as an old seven, it's the biggest compliment you can possibly give a seven. I wish people would. I actually won the ERC Fair Player Award for 15 years. I was gutted. I don't want it. You can have it back. And obviously not do my job well enough. But it's, you walk a fine line. And look, the man, Serge, was defensively the best there was about, you know. So it's, you walk a fine. And you know that it's not an easy position to play, but you're sort of given freedom to go out and just get in, you know, defensively, just get stuck into everything. And when you've got the ball, just roam everywhere. So it's a great position to play, and you can't influence the game so much.
Are you looking at the ball when the ball is coming? Are you looking at the man? What are you doing when you're going for the 10?
When I'm going for the 10, just the man all day long. Yeah, forget the ball. If, you know, it's changed now, isn't it? You've got to be a little bit, you know, legal. Back in the day, you just used to fly off the tail of the line out, and the ball could be in the winger's hands, and you've just hit the 10, and it's just, you shrug your shoulders, and that's just how it is, isn't it? That's just how we go. Serge loves it. Serge is loving it.
No, I try to be smarter. It's true that I was doing a lot of analysis before the game, and where we talk a lot about the game against Johnny Wilkinson, and I have to say, I did a lot of analysis to make sure I'm going to tackle him on time. He used to carry the ball a lot. Then I tried to identify that, to make sure I'm going to tackle him with the ball, not be so late like you showed the first video, but I tried to be effective in terms of tackling the man with the ball to stop the action and to try to release the speed of the ball or the momentum of the game. Then, it's a matter of looking where the ball are starting from and who's going to catch the ball first and trying to match that in order to be effective.
What was he like to be tackled by?
Uncomfortable. If you looked at the way he tackled it, there's nothing classic about how he tackled. There was an arm, a shoulder, a head, a knee, a hip, and an oomph from you at the end of it. It just, he hit you with whatever part of his body was available at that time, you know, and it was a blur of it. I mean, Martin was a different type. Like, Martin was a very annoying guy, because he'd... And like, sevens are cheats, of course they are. They should be on that point all the time. But the different styles of doing it, so Martin would tackle you quite low, knock you on the ground, then be in the way on the ball. He was that really kind of pure, small seven, you know, not one of the big guys. Serge was just a blur, a bang.
It's like a piece of iron.
Yeah, and you're trying to figure out where you're going. So you made a comment there. You said, that's poor ball placement by Raj, but she didn't know which way was up after. So I think Raj would have said, this is just perfect, thank you, yeah. And it was, like, consistently uncomfortable. And then you'd have, what normally happened, actually, was you'd have, and at that stage, France always had a big second row, as in a 6'8" second row, and then a 6'5", 20-stone second row. And what would happen after that collision, some huge truck would just come in over the top of it. I mean, playing France was horrible. Like, you know, there were all these beautiful players out in the back line, but in the forwards, it just was tough work for every minute. And like the funny thing always, when you look at an out half and the out half lies down, it doesn't matter who hits you as a front row forward, you get up as if nothing is wrong and you're in a world of pain and you're trying to make certain that fella has not seen any hint of it, you know, but totally different styles, actually.
The psychological warfare of it. I do want to ask you a little bit about the two Grand Slams that you won. You've got a Grand Slam, Serge, one or two? How many did you win?
Three
Grand Slams.
He had to go one better, didn't he?
How dare you. How dare you.
Just how many?
One of your fingers appears to be stuck. Did Brian O'Driscoll stand on it?
Yeah, Brian. Yeah, this is Brian stand on that.
Okay, well, so I was going to say you were the most, but actually it turns out you weren't.
Sorry, William.
Wow, that's amazing. So we'll get to those, but the difference between the two teams is absolutely phenomenal, yeah. Because the first thing happens, and in the middle of that, you've got the World Cup despair that you talked about. The second one is with Gatland, and yeah. Gatland talks you out of retirement. There's like a short conversation where he comes to you and says, I'm naming the squad. I'm going to put you in. Is it as straightforward as that?
Yeah, and he doubled my win bonus, so I was straight back in there. You know, he's supposed to laugh at that, but they obviously not very funny.
Is that true?
No.
You hesitated.
Like you say, we won it in 05, and Mike Ruddock was a coach, and we played. Our defences weren't as organised as they are now, and you know, we played some brilliant rugby and scored some amazing tries. But the 08 one was, you know, we'd lost to Fiji, I mentioned it earlier, and then. You know, Gats came in. I knew of Gats because obviously he'd done great things at Wasps, and he brought Rob Howley in, who I played with and been coached under as well. And yeah, just sat down and said, look, I think you've retired too early. I didn't think I had, I was 32. And he said, look, I'd like you just to come back for this campaign because I think you've got a little bit more to offer and we need your experience. And yeah, the 08 Grand Slam is a polar opposite to how we won it in 05. You know, I think we only conceded two tries all tournament, which is very un-Welsh, because before that we were sort of a, use a football analogy, like a Newcastle United, where you know you'd score three, we'd score four, but it was the most disciplined Grand Slam we'd ever won, and yeah, got, you know, good decision to come back at retirement.
Why did you shaft Mike Ruddock?
Oh, you'll have to ask Gareth Thomas that. So we didn't shaft Mike Ruddock. The WIU shafted Mike Ruddock. So yeah. Don't believe rumours. You should know that.
Just,
yeah.
Like it's all the statute of limitations is over now. We can all.
It's 10 years is up. Yeah. No, we do that well in Wales. Just as everything is going smoothly, we tend to throw a bomb in, and you know, we like a little bit of anarchy and a bit of chaos. So it was sad. You know, Mike's a great man, and he did an unbelievable job. You know, first coach to win a Grand Slam in 27 years. It was a shame the way it all ended, but. Yeah, I take the, was it the Fifth Amendment? Or I'm not.
The fifth. Yeah. Don't know what that is.
Players, like obviously it all works out in the end from Wales' perspective. Gatlin comes in, but look, I'm not, we don't care anymore, but it's just interesting that like.
Yeah, the rumours, it was all blown up for most of his player. But I don't know, these guys might have had different, but I've never had a meeting with a CEO with a WIU. To discuss coaches, there were a few
Keith,
issues.
Keith definitely has. Keith has several of them along the way.
I can
mention the war there, Martin.
But
we
yeah,
it's the same show every week.
It's funny how it all comes back to Gatland, isn't it? But anyway, go on. Sorry.
But yeah, it was.
He shafted Gatland, in case you didn't know.
Yeah. Did you really? I didn't know that.
Partially.
Only partially, yeah. Right? Okay.
It was like many of them. Brian may also have been involved. We haven't established that.
Absolutely not.
Brian has never admitted to anything.
One thing, the politics, the only in this most recent World Cup bid, which, congratulations, France, we're delighted for you in getting
sorry.
In 2023, did I truly understand the nature of politics. I was naive through my playing days. The same couldn't be said for the man beside me. He was astute. I wish I was a bit more astute as a player to understand the political wranglings that went on within each union and within the bigger picture of rugby.
But I think one bit of advice I'd give a player now, don't get involved in any politics when you're playing. Just concentrate on just stay away from, just play and just concentrate on the game. Don't get involved in all that stuff.
Why was the team so good then when Gatland came in straight away? You got player of the tournament, right?
No, 2005 I got player of the tournament. 2008 Shane got player. Sean Edwards was, we haven't mentioned Sean Edwards. He was a huge, Serge has worked under him and the boys as well. And he just brought a defence and a belief, and we mentioned it earlier with Gats, you know, it's not rocket science. The game plan isn't rocket science. You he just bluffs you into being you're amazingly fit, and you're fitter than any other team, and you can outlast other teams, and you tend to do that once you know your brain believes that you did, and you watch that tournament in particular. We, a couple of games we won at the death, out here actually the Triple Crown game right at the end, the game up in Twickenham, and it was just that really, just a bit of psychologically, he just put us in a great place.
Also, Sean Edwards, I have to say, was one of the great defense coaches at that time, because he brought the blitz defense for Wasp, which is he took to Welsh team, and that, like Sean just said, mentally, physically, it was so intense on the players, and I have to say, I learned a lot from him about how tackle techniques, the detail of what defense is about.
You looked as though you were blitzing all your life, though. You know, sometimes a lot of the time on your own.
It's true. For 17 years in Biarritz, I was blaming by my coach Patrice Lagisquet because I was blitzing all the time. But I tried to control myself. But yeah, I like running at people.
When we try to control myself, what a lie.
That's true.
You never tried to control yourself. You smashed everything yourself.
Just talking about Sean in 2009 in the Lions tour, it's funny. Like he didn't care what happened with attack.
No,
but his small wins, if his defensive team won, he would be jumping around the place, irrespective that the attack was falling apart, and that part of our game was disastrous. He didn't care once his defense got on top. He is so passionate about it, and it's what he gives his heart and soul to, and you can see it. Wales have managed to evolve that system. He stayed in the role as long as Gats, which is pretty impressive. To not have a turnover of coaches and for them to have that success says an awful lot about how much the players think of him and how much he has been able to adapt and over a 10-year period.
And how they get on. I remember I met him in a cafe, I think 2001, 2002 in London. And he said, God, would it be great to see you. Listen, I'd love to. Can I join you? You don't mind if I join you? Have a cup of coffee? He said, okay. I said, yeah, great. And he absolutely grilled me for 2 hours. He wanted to know everything. He was like, this is a chance to have a chat to another international player that I don't coach. I'm taking everything he has. And I said, God, he's a bit intense. You said the word intense. He's unbelievably intense. But I said, this is kind of enjoyable. And I met him the following day, and he totally blanked me.
Yep, that's sure.
Yeah, he'd had the conversation. Well, I don't have any need for you anymore. That's fine. Yeah, come on, next. And it was extraordinary. Like, he is, and like, it's the relationship he's had actually with Gatland as well. So that has lasted for an awful long time.
I think the perception from the outside is this guy who just growls and screams at players, to get them in defence and not miss a tackle. But he is, honestly, you look at the 2011 World Cup, Wales had South Africa first game up, and all summer, that's all the players worked on was the chop tackle. Nobody'd really done it before. Yeah, and we're going back to Ireland in the quarterfinals. But whenever we played France, they had big backs, so it would always be one low, one high. For each game, you'd have a specific, work on, and it would all, 9 times out of 10, it would work, and that's where you get your belief with him, and that's where, tomorrow he will have something under his sleeve that we haven't seen yet to nullify, Murray Sexton, Bundiaki, even just to nullify those guys.
Yeah, I'm getting worried again. No, we are, we definitely are. This Welsh team are really good. I mean, they are
best ever.
What are we doing? We're sleepwalking into this thing. There's that proper needle that we talked about between the coaches. But when you're with Gatland and he's talking to the opposition coaches or he's throwing those bombs, was he like that from the very start with you when you were winning that first Grand Slam? Do you remember anything from that where he's like, yeah?
I think the first Grand Slam, he was quite quiet. And then, he came up with some absolute pearlers. I can remember him when he came up, similar to the Argentina story. We played Argentina 1 week, and I think it came up in the paper on the Tuesday morning that... he came out and said the Welsh front row don't respect the Argentinian front row. And I can remember Adam Jones and Gethin Jenkins saying, what the is he saying? We're going to first scrum running. We went back 100 miles an hour. But he does it to challenge, I think, his front row. And then obviously the famous one that, the Welsh boys hate the Irish more than the English, which is, that's impossible. You can't do anything. So I don't know where he got that from. I think I was more of a personal sort of dig, but he does throw some bombshells, and I'm not against that in many ways. I think it does make you as a player when you're in that camp, then you've got to back up what your coach says.
Do you as a team talk about it when he throws a grenade out there? Yeah, are you chatting about you it and trying to pull it apart yourselves?
You have a little giggle, don't you, to yourselves? You know, actually the front row, I can remember the front row boys chatting about, I can't believe he's put us. They knew I was going to come in after the scrum, you know, and it, like, you know, the flip side, you know, the opposition are going to use that as well. So yeah, the Ireland one was all a bit weird. Where the hell has that come from? Because, you know, we all get on really well. So yeah, you do chat about it.
As
you can see, my finger stitches, and my knee, and
yeah. Best of friends.
KFC.
So you don't hate the Irish?
I love the Irish.
The worst part about it is, do you even think of us, really, as rivals, as like?
Yeah. Know? Oh yeah. You always ask why has our rivalry built up. But you look at, I think between 2005 and 2015, I think between us we won seven tournaments. So basically, we were much better than England at that time, weren't we? So, you know, they were your near, and they always seemed to be, obviously, our first Grand Slam in 05 was against Ireland. 08 was the Triple Crown game. 09, the Wales-Ireland game was the Grand Slam game. So they've always seemed to be these huge games with loads on it. I don't want to mention the World Cup 2011 as well, but they always seem to be these huge games that, and I just think it's built up over that decade.
There's only one of those really big games that we actually won, and that was the Grand Slam year that we won it. All the other times that there were huge games, like the World Cup, like
that's
the previous
brought,
Grand Slam.
That's why I brought it up, yeah.
Like, we tend to win those Six Nations games where neither of us are actually going to win a championship.
That game, it's funny because I covered that game, so you're watching it, you're a bit
Which
removed.
One?
Yeah, the 2009,
yeah.
And all the history of it. And I remember with the BBC, actually thinking at the very start that this was Ireland's year, that this was the opportunity. And it was an amazing, I don't know what it was like as a player, but watching from the outside, it just looked tense. And every game was pressure. They were close. You scored that little like agricultural try against England, which required, you know, our best player ever having to burrow like a front row to score and try to do the right thing at the right time. But it was an ugly win, and it was, and the game at the end, that game in Millennium, and was an amazing game, but there was errors. It was really nervy. It wasn't as if we ever were kind of comfortable that yes, we could go and win it and show that we could win it. It almost as if we tightened with each one, and it was almost the will of two or three of the players that got us over the line for it. And like the dead duck, even Rodgers' drop goal is a really ugly drop goal, but it worked, you know, and it was magic. But we still left the chance for Wales at the end of it. You know, it wasn't, none of those wins were comfortable. It was tough.
To your point, Gert, it's exactly why Wales will come over with loads of confidence, because in those really close games, they've managed to find a way more often than not. And even that time, they should have gotten it done. You know, even the time that we managed to win the slam, they had a kick that dropped half a yard short, and they could have broken our hearts. The World Cup in 2011, for personally, was devastating because I knew it was my last World Cup. But all of these games, all of these close encounters, and when they come out on the right side of the result, that builds a steeliness and a resolve and a belief that, you know, when it gets down to the nitty-gritty, if we're there in the last two or three minutes and we're a score behind or a score in front, we'll get the job done. And that's why they become such a dangerous animal when you play them in games like tomorrow.
That's down to Gatland, really. That's the boomer bust that you had before that, the Newcastle element. He just removed that.
Yeah, I think so. And it's an uncanny knack of, like we mentioned earlier, and what is it about Gatland? He's just got this special power, really, that makes players believe they can win. And they've been so tight, those games. You know, nobody ever gets blown away, whether Ireland win or Wales win. It's always very, very tight. And just, you know, we've had the rub of the green, and he's a lucky, lucky fella in fairness to him.
Yeah, it's not, look, much and all as we give him a bit of a hard time, it isn't all about luck. And when he joined Ireland at that stage in 98, the changes he made in the first year and a half, from all the time, and you asked me about the politics beforehand, you just needed to get involved in politics to play for Ireland at that stage. It was just, we had a different coach every 9 months. It was, you'd be afraid to say that you were selected. Your captains were selected for one game. It was just all kind of nerve-wracking all the time. There was an awful lot of change had to happen at that stage. Gatland came in and said, this is my team. This is the captain.
this is what we're doing, off we go. And he made Ireland incredibly difficult to beat. And where the change happened for Ireland was when all the new players came in, we didn't want to be just difficult to beat, we wanted to actually be positive and win. And there was that, it took a while for him to do that. That was the conversation, we had that conversation before. But he makes them tough. So any team that plays under Gatland, and we saw it in the Lions in the summer, against New Zealand, the Lions were just, they strangled everything. You know, and he's able to do it. He knows it. He has skills.
Yeah, even when they're getting outclassed against England, they still don't get beaten badly in that game, and they're still within. Like they're miles behind that England team with that Welsh team, and still they're within a score at the end of the game. It's 8-7 to France against Italy at the moment. Mm. Not a great opening half for France.
They're delighted.
Yeah, they've had some difficulties, France, just recently, you know. Maybe don't go out on a night out in Scotland. Just a little bit of advice.
We love celebrating defeat. Then, it was difficult to hear that after two, let's say, poor started, even we were unfortunate for against Ireland, the first game, where Sexton put that drop goal from whenever
42 meters.
Yeah, it was just incredible. And the second game against Scotland, where we started really well and we didn't finish the game, we tried to play that counter attack in the 22, and then we get caught. I have to say, it's very important to keep quiet at some time and just stay focused. And fortunately, the players decided to celebrate the defeat in Scotland, and the result of that is now seven of them are at home and watching the game on TV, which is not a good thing.
No, it's not a great thing for them at all, and maybe that's why it's only 8-7. That game's in Marseille tonight. You are listening to an Off the Ball Roadshow special here with the Heineken Rugby Club. We're in the Mansion House. As ever, if you want to get involved, you can tweet us on hashtag OTBHRC, or you can text the show on 53106. It's been a great show so far, but we're going to humiliate two members of the crowd in just a moment by getting them involved in our very special crappy quiz. And we're also going to get the two lads and give them a blindfold. They don't know this bit yet, but we're going to give them the details of that in the break, which we're going to take right now. And we're going to say, yeah, stay tuned from the Mansion House.
Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.